Blog Talk Radio.
Now this is the amazing Kreskin. If you could read my thoughts, you'd know you're listening to Mr. Media Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, Mr. Media, MrMedia.com. Come by and see us sometime. The show is brought to you today on iPhones, Android, Palm, and BlackBerry by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. You can also subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. Mr. Media is also sponsored by thepartyauthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event? For any and all occasions, call the Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJs. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. So, where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from St. Petersburg, Florida, the new media capital of the world and hometown of U.S. Senate candidate and Republican pariah, Governor Charlie Crist, St. Petersburg, Florida. So, like you, I have my own personal political beliefs. Mine are fairly middle of the road, not hard left, not hard right. I believe in what I believe and make decisions on issues and candidates one at a time, not based solely on political affiliation. And while there are a lot of politicians and commentators with whom I agree or don't agree, I always respect men and women on either side of an issue when they impress upon me that they are educated and believe in what they say. I'll give you a few examples. George W. Bush never impressed me as either particularly bright or as believing in anything that came out of his mouth. But mostly, he seemed an amiable fellow with whom people enjoyed spending time, but lacked a strong work ethic or knack for details. Fox News Channel talking head Glenn Beck, who got his career off to a big start right here in the Tampa Bay area at WFLA 970 AM many years ago, was often thought-provoking and entertaining. But just when you started buying into the logic of his line of thought, he'd jump off the cliff and threaten to take you with him. I didn't respect his thought process, conclusions, and ultimately wasn't convinced that he believed half of what he said. He thrived on attention and was willing to say or do whatever was required to keep all ears glued to him. Now, Rush Limbaugh, different story. I always found him to be intelligent, thoughtful, and most important to me, I respected his beliefs because he held them so strongly. Now, all this, and yet I rarely agree with him about anything. He accomplished a great deal, I thought, with humor, making me laugh even when it hurt. He takes pleasure sometimes in being cruel, which I don't respect, but Limbaugh is not always the picture that his political opponents paint. So I was intrigued to read Zev Hafet's new quasi-biography, Rush Limbaugh, An Army of One. It's an unusual approach, sometimes first-person account, in which the author takes us along on his own journey of discovery. And it's unique because of the direct access Limbaugh gave Hafet via face-to-face interviews, show transcriptions, and email. Now, if you somehow have never heard or seen Rush Limbaugh, here's a clip of him on Fox News Channel being interviewed by Chris Wallace about health care.
Let's turn to health care reform. Yep. You have made no secret of the fact you oppose the public option, government-run health insurance to compete with private insurers. With tens of millions of Americans still uninsured, do you think that the government has any moral obligation to find some way to cover them?
There is a way to insure the uninsured without doing any of what we're doing. If that were the objective, then I'd be full for it. This is not about insuring the uninsured. This is not about health care. This is about stealing one-sixth of the U.S. private sector and putting it under the control of federal government. And when they get this health care bill, if they do, that's the easiest, fastest way for them to be able to regulate every aspect of human behavior, because it'll all have some related cost to health care, what you drive, what you eat, where you live, what you do, and there'll be penalties for violating regulations. It's going to be the biggest snatch of freedom and liberty that has yet occurred in this country.
And in 30 seconds, how do you insure the uninsured without this big overhaul?
I've run the numbers, and the real number of uninsured that want insurance is 12 million. Take some of the unspent stimulus. We have 85% of the stimulus unspent. Take some of it. For $35 to $40 billion a year, you could insure those people. Not $2 trillion, not $1.4 trillion. That's the objective. Do it now.
Do you think the individual mandate is constitutional? Do you think...
No.
I don't think the government has the right
no.
to tell people, you're going to get health insurance, and if you don't get it, you're going to pay a penalty.
I do not think it's constitutional. Chris, these are dark days for the country. This is deadly serious stuff. This is a total attempt to remake the country as founded and constituted, and it worries me greatly.
Love Limbaugh or hate him, there's a lot of valuable insight in this book. I read it just after Jonathan Alter's New History, The Promise, Barack Obama, Year One, and a middle-of-the-roader like me couldn't ask for better balance. So, Zev Hafetz, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Good to have you here. So I hear that Mr. Limbaugh is getting married again this weekend. Any chance you're going to be there?
No chance. I won't be there. I'm going to be in Pennsylvania with my family.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so tell me, what is a nice boy with an ethnic-sounding name such as Zev Hafetz doing writing a book about Rush Limbaugh?
Well, let me start with the Hafetz part. Obviously, you know Hebrew. And Hafetz is the way it's pronounced in Hebrew, but in English it's spelled C-H-A-F-E-T-S, Chafetz.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody who's listening wants to buy the book, which is my great, you know, greatest interest in this conversation, they need to look for it under C-H. Nice.
Wait, you're not here for the stimulating conversation? You're here to sell books?
For that,
I'm totally crushed.
I would listen for your stimulating conversation. I wouldn't talk. Nice Jewish boy. You know, I think that there are probably people that would debate that characterization. I got involved with this because I actually was doing a piece for the New York Times Magazine about the 2008 Republican primaries, and I went down to interview Limbaugh in Palm Beach to talk to him about McCain. And at the end of our interview, I said to Limbaugh, you know, you'd make a great profile yourself for the Times. And he said, the Times will never, ever, you know, do a profile on me that isn't a hit job and so on. And I said, well, I think you're underestimating the Times Magazine. Let me try. And he said, I assure you that you won't succeed, and if you succeed, you know, I'll give you 2 Yankees tickets, best seats in the house. So I said, well, I can't, you know, do a deal like that where only I can win. What if you win? And he said, well, send me a couple cigars. So I was going back to my hotel, and the engineer, Brian, Limbaugh's engineer, drove me back. And I said to him, what kind of cigars does Limbaugh smoke? And Brian said to me, well, I don't know, but they cost a lot more than Yankees tickets. So that's the genesis. The Times Magazine did want, as it turned out, a piece on Limbaugh, which I wrote. It was a cover story for them 2 years ago. And I decided to expand it because there was more to say. He didn't want to cooperate. I think he thought it would be intrusive, and I think he also wondered what a nice Jewish boy with an ethnic name would want to, you know, say about him. But in the end, he didn't have any choice because I just insisted. And after a while, he started to email me. He doesn't hear, you know, he has a cochlear implant, so he doesn't talk on the phone very easily. But we exchanged more than 100 emails, and I went down to see him a couple times and more. And he also opened up his, you know, his family and his circle of friends, and even his psychologist, you know, talked to me. So ultimately, I spent quite a lot of time either thinking about or writing about him.
Now, Zev, he's not known for giving a lot of interviews outside of controlled situations. I mean, you know, you'll see him on Fox, and really not a lot of other places because, you know, he like, well, George Bush was the same way. He wouldn't go anywhere that he might be possibly be ambushed or asked a difficult question. How did you get in the door with Rush to begin with?
You know, I don't know. I asked to go and see him, and I think, you know, he did some research about me, and which I later found out from, you know, from one of the people on his staff. And I guess that they just decided that maybe, you know, maybe it would be worth talking to me. I don't know. There's nothing particularly charming about me other than that. You know, he didn't do it for my good looks, I assure you. So it probably had to do with his... He once told me that he had an instinct that I would be fair with him, and which I hope I have been. I mean, I tried to.
Did you have to, once you got past the magazine piece for the Times and started working on the book, to get his continued cooperation, did you have to offer anything in exchange? Did you have to give him any guarantees you wouldn't touch on certain things?
Nothing.
Okay.
He asked me, you know, is this authorized? And I said, no, it's not authorized. And he said, well, why should I do it then? And I said, because I'm going to do it anyway. And he said, do I get any money out of it? And I said, you're already too rich for, you know, you don't need money. I need money. So that was it. And I wrote what I wrote. I never showed him anything. When the book was already finished and bound and, you know, done, I sent him a copy of it. And I didn't hear for a couple, 3 weeks. And then he said that he said on the air that he hadn't read it. He liked it because people who had read it liked it. But he said he wasn't going to read it. And, I wrote him a note and I said, come on, you know, what kind of thing is that? You know, read it. See what you think. And just yesterday, he, at his last broadcast before he went off on his honeymoon, he said that he had read the book, and he actually likes it a lot. So I'm glad he likes it, and there it is.
Well, and I can tell our listeners that not only did he like it, but there's a note on the front and center on rushlimbaugh.com that says he liked it. He was surprised that he liked it and that he thought it was very fair, and he never thought he would say that. So, you know, but I have to ask you, as a guy who's written for the New York Daily News, written more recently for the New York Times Magazine, do you think that's a drawback for you going forward as a journalist, that you did this book on Limbaugh and he liked it? Would that cause you any problems with editors?
Look at me. You know, I've written all, you know, I'm 62, going on 63 years old. And most of my life I've written what I felt like writing and said what I felt like saying. And, you know, very often it was not particularly popular with editors and so on. Sometimes it was. You know, I don't want to say that I'm completely indifferent, but at this stage of the game, you know, I'm an old Jew. I'm not about to start worrying about what editors think at this point.
What about what old Jews think, just since you phrased it that way? I mean, I mentioned in my introduction that, you know, a lot of people think a lot of things about Rush. A lot of times people who haven't listened to him have a very pointed opinion of him. Nonetheless, sometimes I think that without having listened to him, you can't really put him in context. But a lot of Jewish people are not very fond of him and his approach.
Yeah, I know, including just about everybody in my family and everybody all my friends. Look, I think Jews are great. I'm an Israeli Jew as well as just a plain old Jew. I've spent, you know, most of my life in Israel. I don't think Jews are very smart about politics, most of them. And I don't think that they have any idea what they're talking about when they talk about Limbaugh, because none of them listen to Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that, in general, people that have strong opinions about things they know nothing about add much to the conversation or impress me much in terms of their, you know, insights.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to be against Rush Limbaugh. It's like, you know, it's like people on the right who are against Jews. I mean, it's not on the right. I mean, on the far right, the Ku Klux, or on the left, by the way, on the, you know, on the anti-Israel left.
Right.
Everybody's got, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but But I don't think that, I mean, you know, a majority of Jews in the United States voted for Jimmy Carter, too. I don't think Jews are always extremely intelligent in their assessment of where their interests lie.
Now, some of the critics that I've read complained that your book didn't break a lot of new ground, but I mean, I kind of thought that was besides the point. I haven't read a previous, I didn't read his Rush's own two books, and I just thought that you managed to put kind of a human face on a radio personality who is kind of more caricature than flesh to even many of his supporters.
Well, I mean, first of all, for it broke new ground for people that don't know much about Rush or who don't listen to him, which is, you know, a lot of people. The one review that I'm aware of that said, well, actually, I think there were two. One was in the Washington Post, and it was sort of dismissive, but it was written by David Frum, who is one of Limbaugh's great enemies in the Republican Party, and who actually wrote a Newsweek cover story last year about how Rush Limbaugh was, you know, was toxic for the Republican Party. In that review, I'm sure that David, you know, David Frum didn't learn much from the book because he's an expert on Limbaugh. On the other hand, the Washington Post ombudsman apologized to the Post readers for having assigned the book to Frum, which was, you know, sort of wildly inappropriate, especially since I wrote about David in the book and he didn't mention that in the review. So that was one. The other was written by Janet Maslin, who I thought wrote a fantastic review as far as selling books was concerned for me, because it was so nasty. But what I liked about it especially was she, you know, after saying that it was a terrible book, she also complained that it's too short, which is like, you know, the woman who complains to the waiter that the food is bad and the portions are small.
Mm-hmm.
So there it is. Other than those two, you know, a lot of people have said negative things about the book, and they're, you know, very welcome to do that. But nobody else has, you know, said that there isn't enough new stuff in there. Some people have said that there's too much.
Hmm.
I guess, you know, like any book, I mean, there are different levels of information, as I said, among readers. I'm not apt, for example, to find almost any book about Israeli politics very enlightening because I've spent a good part of my life in Israeli politics, but that doesn't mean that people who aren't experts in it wouldn't find many books on Israeli politics on all sides of the issues quite interesting.
I mentioned earlier, I asked you kiddingly if you were going to the
wedding.
The wedding. Unless I'm mistaken, you did spend some time and get to meet his.
I did. Husband. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean.
Yeah. Well, what can you tell us about her?
Well, the first time I was down in Florida, or maybe it was the second. But anyway, among the first or second time, Rush introduced me to Catherine Rogers as his girlfriend. They had just been going out for a short time. He had not too much before that had gotten divorced from his third wife, Marta. And, you know, she's much younger than he is. Rush is 59. She, I think, is 33. She's a real knockout.
Mm.
And she's also, I found her extremely charming and really interesting. She's the daughter of a naval officer, I believe an admiral. I could be wrong about that. I think he's an admiral. And a mother who was a diplomat. And she, Catherine, was sort of raised all over the world. She was educated partly in Africa and partly in Hawaii and other places. And she's just quite, you know, I found her quite sophisticated. And very sweet, very nice. Rush had always said to people around him, this is after his third divorce, if I ever mention anything about getting married, I want you to throw me off a mountain or drown me or such, you know, that kind of thing. And he said something like that to me when I first met him. Last August, I was down in Palm Beach, finishing up the interviewing for the book, and I saw Catherine again, and she had this gigantic diamond, what looked to me to be a diamond, on her finger. And I said to her, oh, you know, congratulations are in order. And she said, well, you know, not really. It's not an engagement ring. And then I said to Rush afterwards, I see that Catherine's got a ring on her. You know, have you changed your mind about getting married? And he said to me, well, I don't know. We're considering it. But he said, there's so much abuse that goes with being me that I don't know if I want to subject Catherine to that level of abuse. And then I guess he decided, or they decided together, that she was ready to take what goes with being Mrs. Limbaugh, you know, in both directions, for good and for bad. And off they go. They're getting married on Saturday.
Probably safer being Mrs. Limbaugh than being Mrs. American League umpire who blew a perfect game last night. So, you know, I guess of the two.
Yeah, especially in Detroit.
What do you think, before we have to wrap up, what do you think is most misunderstood by the public about Rush Limbaugh?
I think that the public doesn't understand what his role is in the American political culture. People say, oh, he's an entertainer, which is true, and they say he's a businessman, which is true. You know, there are many things. But the other thing, the main thing that Limbaugh is right now is the most important person in red America. He's the most important person in the Republican Party. He's the leader of the Republican Party. After Obama's election, when there was a complete, you know, vacuum, in leadership, Bush went back to Crawford, and McCain went to wherever he went. And there were a couple of, you know, Mitch McConnell and Boehner and so on were the leaders of the party. And nobody knew what to do about this new president who was so popular and so different and so charming. And Limbaugh stood up at that point and said, I hope he fails. And I'm going to make him fail. And I'm going to demand from the Congress, from the Republicans in Congress, that we vote against, we oppose him and his agenda and everything he wants to do in America. And when some people in Congress, and also Michael Steele, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, tried, and Colin Powell and others tried to, you know, achieve some kind of cooperation and bipartisanship, Limbaugh smacked them down so fast that nobody even tried after that.
Right.
And as a result, and Limbaugh has always said, you know, quoting Ronald Reagan, that real conservatism, meaning Reagan conservatism, wins every time it's tried politically. So this year, the Republican Party is going into the elections in November running on a platform of Limbaugh-Reagan conservatism, real conservatism. If the Republican Party wins a big victory in November, this is going to be seen as a vindication of Limbaugh's, you know, political principles.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, you know, to me, my friends on the left are always, excuse me, surprised by things that are happening on the right. They don't get where it comes from. Mm-hmm. What's the Tea Party? It's so mysterious. Tea Party is Rush Limbaugh, you know, in the streets, that's all. There's nothing in the doctrines of the Tea Party that didn't come right off of Limbaugh's show.
Dev, I need to interrupt you because we're just about out of time, and I want to tell everybody that they can find Zev Chavetz's new book, and it's spelled Chafets, but it's pronounced Chavetz. It's Rush Limbaugh, An Army of One. You can find it at great bookstores everywhere.
Even
you can
bad
order it.
Bookstores have it.
Even bad bookstores have it. There you go. Or you can order it online at MrMedia, MrMedia.com.
Yeah, do that.
Zev, I really enjoyed it. I feel like we could probably go another 30 minutes and just begin to get into this. But I'm so grateful to you for coming on the show today. And it really is a well-written, enjoyable book, whether you're a Limbaugh fan or not. And, you know, thanks for being with us today.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
Good
my
luck
pleasure.
With the show.
And, folks, for more original interviews with your favorite politicians and journalists, you can surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you share a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next time.
Hi, this is Ramona Singer from The Real Housewives of New York City, and we're listening to Mr. Media.